Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Camille Leek, Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity Program Manager. She's been doing ID&E at two Fortune 100 organizations. Excited to have you on. Welcome, Camille.
Hello. Thank you so much. So glad to be here.
Yeah, good. It's been a while. I'm glad you came on and catching up here. As we talked before, you know, we are podcasts, one of the few podcasts focusing on multicultural marketing, insights, diversity and inclusion. And before we kind of jump into best practices, you've had some great experience at some of the largest companies in the world. Would love to talk a little bit about, you know, your career trajectory. How did you get into what you're doing?
Yeah. So let's start there. So I've been an inclusion, diversity, and equity practitioner for the last 4 years. But prior to then, the bulk of my career, you know, over 10 years, was actually in market research. That's what I studied in undergrad, and that's where I spent the majority of my career. And so I worked with various organizations, either as part of a consulting, market research and consulting firm, or within an organization, helping brand teams in particular understand what does it mean to remain relevant to an increasingly diverse marketplace, and also what does it mean to remain relevant to a marketplace where consumers are having different expectations for the brands and companies they're choosing to support. So that is where my interests or my career really started when it came to inclusion, diversity, and equity, first starting from that consumer perspective.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And that's how we met. You were in a market research role. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, you know, for me personally and professionally, you know, everything that happened in 2020, you know, we increasingly got, and even previous to that, to be honest, we got outreach from people in inclusion, diversity, and equity programs at large organizations. And in my head, I was always like, no, we're market research and it's different. Mm-hmm. But I guess where I'm going is like, how has your market research and consumer background like helped you or, you know, better be a better program manager from an inclusion, diversity, and equity perspective?
Yeah. So it was sort of like this interesting culmination of strengths or abilities where I was still in the market researcher role, but I was at an organization where they were just starting down their inclusion, diversity, and equity journey. And they were approaching it from what I lovingly refer to as like the kumbaya perspective, that is, let's get together, let's hold hands and sing songs and eat just different interesting food from our various backgrounds, which is great. But what I thought was missing, or what I saw to be missing, was there was no connection directly to the business case. That is, there in all of these events, no one was talking about how this supported the business strategy. So in my role, still within market research, what I decided to start doing was talking to the brand teams about inclusion, diversity, and equity from a strategic standpoint. That is to say, how were we leaving money on the table by not investing in diversity, equity, and inclusion? And the fact is, the most efficient and effective and authentic way to remain relevant to an increasingly diverse marketplace is to have an increasingly diverse workforce. So I'm talking about inclusion, diversity, and equity from this perspective, from this business strategy, business case perspective. And the chief D&I officer at the time heard about how I was talking about it. And she asked if I'd be interested in joining her team, even though she, you know, the role was in HR and I don't have an HR background. She said, we would never talk about diversity and inclusion this way. Would you be interested in joining my team? And I said, absolutely, I'd love to do it. Let's see what happens. So I think having that background, having that market research background, but sitting within HR gave me a very different perspective as to how we could talk about inclusion, diversity, and equity. And so in terms of how it balanced or how it helped, you know, there's the data analytics on both sides, as you know, you're going to be looking at the data, or at least you should. That's one of the things I recommend to individuals and organizations. Have metrics for inclusion, diversity, and equity, just like you would any other business initiative. So I think understanding the consumer, understanding that this is about people dynamics and the fact that people have different needs and motivations also helped me in this role, because just like every consumer is different, every employee is different. And you got to think a business is absolutely selling their product, the widget or service that they provide, but their other product that they're serving is also their business environment, their employee experience. And so if that's a product you're looking to increase, enhance, or evolve, you're going to have to listen to your consumers, which in this case are your current or potential employees.
That's great. And you hit it, the nail on the head in terms of what I was struggling with as a market researcher. I sold our company short in that, like, no, we can't help with diversity and inclusion, mm-hmm. but that switch turned when you realize, and actually there was someone on our podcast, Solomon Bennett from Target. He kind of helped me flip that switch and talking exactly about what you're talking about. He said it makes sense and sense. And he was, you know, the S, yes. ENSC and the CENTS. And he talked, you know, I talked to him like, so about diversity and inclusion, he heads up Insights at Target. And he said, you know, where we go to in terms of multicultural insights are our employees at the store level. And I think there's a little more direct connection there in that he's like, look, the people that are working in our stores are also our consumers. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I mean, literally one in one, right? And I love your perspective of like, yeah, you're, especially now, right? When we look at how much competition there is in the talent marketplace. Mm-hmm. And then it's like you're selling a product, you know, which is come work at our company. And mm-hmm. we know, just like from a consumer perspective, like diversity and inclusion pays off. Like it's not just from an ethical or moral perspective. Yes. Like diverse teams are driving bottom line, right? And I'm assuming you're using some of those metrics as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like by now, hopefully we've all been exposed to all the studies that show over and over and over again that more diverse organizations financially outperform their more homogeneous counterparts. We also see in research that more inclusive organizations have higher rates of productivity because people aren't putting energy into hiding or covering who they are. So they're able to produce and create more. And both of those things help to increase retention and loyalty. So again, so in all these aspects, we see the business case, the financial benefit of being a more inclusive or diverse and equitable organization. And so, yes, it fundamentally goes back to sort of the interconnected cycle of both the internal and external environment that an organization has. So yes, if I ultimately as a business, my goal is to increase the amount of widgets sold or increase the amount of profits I bring in. How can I do that? Well, I can be more relevant to an increasing amount of different types of consumers. And particularly in this case, thinking about marginalized consumers who have oftentimes been ignored by the marketplace. Well, what's the best way I can do that? Well, I can have more marginalized identities within my organization that can point out to me some of the missed opportunities I may have within the marketplace, because they're just going to be things that I don't know. And there are going to be things that I don't know. We all have blind spots, most of which are the result of our own lived experiences. You know, as woke as I like to think I am, I'm never going to know what it's like to be Asian American, or I'll never know what it's like to be LGBTQ+, or I'll never know what it's like to be a veteran. So I have to do the work individually or as a leader of a brand or a product to understand what are the opportunities with these different identities, with these different consumers that my product or service could tap into as a unique value proposition. But in order to have that insight, I have to have that insight on my team, or I have to have a partner that has that insight. So that's how all of this is connected. And then of course, the more you bring in diverse talent, you have more inclusion that increases your brand relevancy. And then as your brand relevancy increases and your brand recognition goes up, then the more people want to work at your organization. So it all goes hand in hand.
That's such a good point. And I think, you know, I've seen a lot of kind of diversity and equity practitioners, ironically, not have that open-mindedness that you have, right? Like where they're like, kind of know everything. And it's like, that's impossible. So I really appreciate that frankness that you're sharing. Like you don't, you know, sometimes you don't know. And I suffer from it sometimes, right? I think I look at data, but I start to look at like open ends, for example, of consumers like Asian Americans, mm-hmm. Like Black Americans. And I look at some of these open ends and I'm like, wow, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, you start to read some answers. And we've done some pretty heavy studies. And so, yeah, that's such a good point to have that openness to learn. And I, you know, something came up, a question I had, like, do you see there's a benefit, and you have an interesting perspective from both being on the consumer side and now kind of the HR and talent side. Mm-hmm. Do you see a benefit in connecting or aligning kind of the multicultural, cross-cultural strategies on the consumer side and diversity and equity on the kind of HR side? Is there any benefit, or should companies kind of be aligning that?
I absolutely do see there being a benefit. I actually think oftentimes organizations can limit their inclusion, diversity, and equity initiatives by only housing it in HR. That is to say, when inclusion, diversity, and equity sits in HR, that can be the internal perception. Oh, this is only an HR thing. But as we just discussed, inclusion, diversity, and equity impacts how we interact with our employees, how we interact with our customers, how we interact with our community partners. So inclusion, diversity, and equity is much larger than HR. It definitely has an HR impact, clearly, but it has an impact on the brand teams as well. It could have an impact on public relations or community engagement and contributions. So I find it is much more useful to have inclusion, diversity, and equity sit in the house of like an overall strategy organization, or reporting directly up into the CEO as a standalone organization, which touch points into all these different facets of the business. Because inclusion, diversity, and equity isn't this other thing. Isn't this thing we think about at the end of whatever we're doing, whether it's recruitment or whether it's brand strategy or whether it's community engagement, it isn't this thing we think about at the end. It has to be built in at the beginning of any strategy, because when it is built in at the end, when it's sort of this afterthought, people know it. And as you know, particularly in the marketplace, we know it when it's inauthentic and we're just like, oh, this is gross. This isn't real. And so you're going to want to make sure inclusion, diversity, and equity sits in a place in your business where it is going to be built into all of your strategies at the beginning.
Now you got me thinking, and maybe this is already a thing, but like it should be in the C-suite, mm-hmm. like chief mm-hmm. diversity. Are there companies that have that? Like I've seen chief impact officer.
Yeah.
Is that diversity and inclusion?
It can depend. So depending on the organization you're looking at, you may have a chief diversity officer and they report directly into the CEO. That's rare, but it can happen. A lot of times you'll have a chief diversity officer who either reports into the chief HR officer, or that is a combined position. Or you may have a chief diversity officer sit somewhere in a different group, but not necessarily have the same level of visibility as somebody in the actual C-suite, even though their title will be chief diversity officer. So that's typically what happens in a lot of organizations. But I have seen more and more organizations having a chief diversity officer role or person in like their strategy or business development group. So this is the group that is thinking long term. Again, their impact can be felt across the entire organization. And then having the diversity, inclusion, and equity team sit there with sort of like, I guess, a matrix rollout across the organization, I think is one way more organizations are trying to increase the spread or influence of inclusion, diversity, and equity.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I feel like I hope we start seeing more and more companies kind of integrating into the C-suite, because to your point, that is how it's really going to seep across the whole organization. And it makes me think about the other end. Like,
yeah.
I think like employees and ERG groups. Mm-hmm. You know, what's from your perspective, like, what's the role of ERG groups? I mean, how important are they?
Yeah.
How do they interface, if at all, with kind of diversity and equity programs?
Yeah. So many things to talk about there. Full disclosure, I'm very transparent about my personal approach to inclusion, diversity, and equity, and not every practitioner agrees with this. So because of my background in market research and just in general, I tell people my job is to do two things when I come into a space as an inclusion, diversity, and equity practitioner. One is to help you understand how inclusion, diversity, and equity impact your bottom line. That is, frankly, how does it help you make money? Because it does. And then two, to make you really, really uncomfortable, because if you're not uncomfortable, you're not doing the work. And so whether it's both of those elements or one of those, not all ID&E practitioners agree with that strategy. So I say all that to say that for me, the purpose of any ERG, any employee resource group, has to be their goal is the recruitment, retention, and advancement of that particular marginalized identity. Because if it's not that, again, you're not tying it to the business. And it's really easy for it just to become this little social club. Hmm. But what you want to do is directly tie the goals of not just the organization, but any event that ERG puts on to the recruitment, retention, and advancement of that underrepresented group. Now, the goal, and again, I can't speak for everyone, but my goal, and I like to think the goal of ERGs, is to work themselves out of existence. Ideally, we'd be in a place where you don't need ID&E practitioners. You don't need ERGs. Because oftentimes when I'm doing work in organizations, you know, we always get the question, well, why isn't there an ERG for straight white men? And I like to tell people, well, there absolutely is. It's called whatever company you're working at, and you're all members of it because you're doing a really great job at recruiting and retaining and advancing straight white men. It's these other groups you kind of need to focus on. So you got to have these groups for now. But ideally, if the work is done correctly, there will come a point where you don't need these ERGs, or you will need different ERGs.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I mean, that shifts my perspective. Because I think the way that I've looked at them is, I guess, it's like a safe space for, and it still is, right?
Yes.
I think, but you're right. Ultimately, you should be working for the company to be that safe space. Because if just having a safe space implies that being at the company is not a safe space. So that's a really good point. I like that. I think that's a good takeaway for people maybe in their ERGs or leading ERGs. And I think that's a good transition. You know, we have listeners here. I think you've shared a lot of insights on those that are already practitioners on some best tips. I mean, what would you say for people, either employees or managers, directors, VPs that are starting to look into creating an inclusion, diversity, and equity program at their companies? Like, what are some best practices from a starting perspective? Because it sounds like you've been there.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely some things that immediately come to mind. First and foremost, if you are interested in going into this role, or you are thinking about putting together a team, one of the call outs or watch outs I recommend for people is, just because somebody may be of a marginalized identity does not mean they will therefore be a successful ID&E practitioner, a manager, or a director, or a VP. So unfortunately, there have been a lot of organizations who have said, oh, you're a woman, you can be our ID&E VP, or you are Black, you can be our chief diversity officer. That is not necessarily the case. So we want to make sure that is not the standard that we hold ourselves to.
And also, maybe they don't want to be. That's another thing.
Exactly.
Like, not everyone wants to be. They may be good, but they don't want to be.
So critical. That is so true. It is very, very important to remember that just because somebody is of a marginalized identity, they may not want to do inclusion, diversity, and equity work. Like, I literally raise my hand and say, yes, please pay me money so I can tell you what it's like to be Black and a woman and to make you really uncomfortable about these things. I want to do it, but not every Black woman does, or whatever marginalized identity does, to your point. That's so true. And that's also true for affinity groups or employee resource groups. Don't just assume that they want to lead that work. Not everybody wants to be a cultural guide. A lot of people do, but not everybody does. So in terms of putting a team together or an initiative or a program together, there are a couple of things that I recommend. It's really important that there is leadership buy-in. That is to say, there is no program or initiative that will have any success in any organization if leadership doesn't think there's a problem. Because if leadership doesn't think that there's a problem, there's no reason, no incentive for them to put any sort of resources, whether it's time or a financial investment behind this programming. They first have to believe and clearly articulate that in our organization, there is a problem. There is a gap. We are not either as diverse or inclusive or as equitable as we can be. And I'm looking to this individual or this team to help guide us. That's the other point. The leadership team has to be a bit humble and recognizing that they may not be able to come up with the answers. And so they're going to look to this group to help provide them and to help guide them. The other key thing to keep in mind as you're putting together a program or an initiative, again, like I said before, like with any other business initiative, there are going to be metrics, and you'll use those metrics to determine whether or not you're making any progress. So if you have an organization who says, yep, I want to stand up an inclusion, diversity, and equity program, the first thing you need to ask is, okay, how are you prepared to be held accountable for not making your goals? Or even before that, are you prepared to set goals and then be prepared to be held accountable for not making them? So when it comes to diversity, you're going to want to set representation goals. That is to say, in the next 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years, this is what we expect to see when it comes to our representation of women or Black people or Latinx or Asian Americans or people with disabilities or veterans. Or LGBTQ+, if your organization collects that information, setting very clear goals for total representation as well as representation across different levels throughout your organization. Similarly, with inclusion, you're going to want to set goals when it comes to either inclusion or engagement surveys, looking at it by total as well as different demographic groups. So if 80% of your organization says, yes, I feel included in my organization, but only 30% of Latinx people say yes, then you have a problem. And so you're going to identify that as a problem and then set a goal, a specific goal for increasing that particular metric. And then when it comes to equity, again, you're going to want to set very specific goals as it relates to seeing statistical similarities across recruitment and hiring rates, across promotion and retention rates. And where you aren't seeing parity, identifying why that might be the case and doing the work to fix or close that gap.
That's great. I mean, you provided three great cornerstones or foundation for these programs. And I'm thinking back to this, the second point you made, leadership buy-in. If I had to guess, that's probably the most difficult. And it's ironic, right? Because I mean, I can look at every public company and kind of see the makeup. Like most every company has a diversity problem.
Yeah.
And I think leadership is aware of that. So going beyond the numbers, because leadership knows the numbers, how do you make a case? Like what else do you use if it like, because I think everyone's aware of the numbers and I think it's easy for leadership to say, yeah, but you know, we're hiring at HBCUs, we're doing this, and it's kind of patchwork. Like, what do you do? Do you present employee stories? Do you present social, you know, what people are saying on social? I don't know. Like, how do you humanize a story?
So yeah, there's definitely the aspect of humanizing it. So you can do employee panels, which I think can be very useful, where people of different marginalized identities share what it means to be a person of that identity, particularly in the workplace. However, I only recommend doing those when, as a result of those conversations, specific change will take place. Unfortunately, what can happen a lot of times is marginalized employees will participate in these panels. They'll share their deepest, darkest secrets. They'll get really vulnerable. Everybody will cry and applaud, and then nothing will change. Everything will stay the exact same. So again, it goes back to the fundamental decision of leadership to say, yes, we have a problem and we recognize we need to change. That's the real hard part, is that you'll get leaders and organizations say, yes, I'm all on board with diversity, inclusion, and equity. And then you'll say, okay, great. Now this is what we need to do. Oh, wait, you mean I need to change? I need to be different? No, I'm not ready to do that. And that's the hard part, because too many times we think that, yeah, I want my organization to be more diverse, inclusive, and equitable, set up a program, make it happen, check the box, boom, we're good. But really what diversity, equity, and inclusion is all the everyday little behaviors each and every single one of us do. And it requires each and every one of us to show up and be different. And it's not one big grand initiative that is going to fix all of that. It is every little thing. We have to be willing to check ourselves and realize, when am I not being inclusive? When am I not being equitable? What sort of impact is this having on diversity? And that's the hard part, because that's the part, again, where we have to change. It's really a mindset shift.
You know, and this gets me thinking, you know, your optimism is palpable. You're like, I believe this, and I move. And sometimes, you know, I get like, you know, working, I'm not in diversity and inclusion squarely, but working with companies, sometimes I get frustrated or like downtrodden of mm-hmm. how do you stay positive? Like, because, you know, in the scope of things you're moving, especially at these large organizations that you're working at, I know you're making change, but you know, it's progressive. Like, how do you stay positive for, you know, I just.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I will say for anyone who is currently an ID&E practitioner, or if you're thinking about doing it, it is important for you to know that there can be a lot of burnout in this space. It can also be very emotionally taxing, because usually you're a marginalized identity yourself. And so it can be sort of hard to talk through this on a continuous basis. But I will say I am thoroughly energized by this kind of stuff. I personally love it. I'm fascinated by it. But I think part of the reasons I'm able to stay optimistic is because I tell people my role as an ID&E practitioner is my goal is never to convince anybody of anything. I am never seeking to change anyone's mind. My goal is simply to acknowledge that if it is your goal as an organization or as an individual to become an ally, to become an advocate for marginalized identities, here's the steps we can take to get there. I'm not here to tell you that you should. There is no law that says you have to be diverse, inclusive, and equitable. In fact, if anything else, I would encourage organizations, like, if you don't want to do it, then don't do it. You know, there's no need for you to mm-hmm. fake it and act like you want to do it, because then that's just going to set yourself up for failure, because now you've built this expectation that you want to be diverse, inclusive, and equitable, but you really don't. And I find what most people appreciate, or at least what I appreciate, is, you know, don't piss on me and tell me it's raining. I'd rather you just be honest, like, no, I don't feel like changing. I don't want to be more diverse, inclusive, and equitable. I just want to do things the way I've always done them. Great. So the way I stay optimistic is by focusing on people and organizations who are open to the idea of, okay, I need to be different. I need to show up differently. How do I do that? And working with them along that spectrum, along that journey, supporting them with different tips or nudges or resources they may want to tap into along that journey. Now, that is really, really hard to do, particularly when you're working in a corporate space, because even after you're told, like, yep, there's buy-in, you still have to continuously make your case. So that is very taxing. And I've been fortunate enough where I've been in a role where I have a chief diversity officer who gets to handle all the buy-in stuff, and I just get to focus on the actual execution. But yeah, that can be probably the most draining part of this.
Well, that's great advice. And I think that's a great place for us to end here. That was a great conversation. Thank you so much. For listeners that want to reach out to you, either share support or, you know, ask questions about what they're doing at their organization, what's the best way to find you online?
Sure. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Camille Leek. I also have my own practice, my own diversity, equity, and inclusion practice called Real Talk in Brave Spaces. So you can find me online at www.realtalkbravespaces.com.
Thanks again, Camille, and thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.